In the early 1990s, Greek immigrant Gus Boulis, founder of the popular fast food chain Miami Subs, aims to grow his empire with a new enterprise, a casino at sea that he calls Sun Cruise.
It becomes this instant sensation. It becomes incredibly popular. And eventually it grows into this huge fleet of 11 luxury gambling yachts, basically.
Gus Boulis not only becomes a very wealthy man, but a much respected and admired member of the Florida community.
He was a very hard worker. He started from nothing, this tiny little fishing village, and then he built up this huge empire.
But one day, it would all come to an end as Boulis leaves his Fort Lauderdale office.
And this black Mustang pulls up alongside his BMW, rolls down the window, and basically shoots, fires three shots straight into the driver's side of the car.
Hi, I'm Joey Dowd.
And I'm Kareem Tapsch.
Beaches, nightlife, and tropical weather may be what folks imagine when they think Florida. But as Miami natives, we like to say that South Florida is a sunny place for shady people.
Each week, we'll bring you a new episode of a true crime case committed right under the Florida sun. From the outrageous to the utterly bizarre. Think you've heard it all? Think again. This is Paradise Lost, crime in Miami. It's 1980 in Key West, Florida. Gus Boulis, a Greek immigrant who spent the last decade or so in Canada, arrives to the sunny island. Boulis had just helped grow the Canadian sandwich shop Mr. Subs from a handful of stores to over 200 locations.
Fresh off that success, and with a good amount of profit he made from that venture, he's ready to start his own restaurant chain. With a $50,000 loan from his new girlfriend, Margaret Wren, they get to work. Despite being founded in the Florida Keys, Boulis would call this new restaurant Miami Subs.
And they renovate this dilapidated restaurant in Key West, and that becomes the first Miami Subs.
That's Ali Pichon, a reporter from the Miami Herald who recently wrote a feature story on Boulis.
He franchised with the same strategy that he used for Mr. Sub, which was very possibly where he got the inspiration for the name Miami Subs. He franchised and it took off pretty quickly from that one restaurant in Key West. It spread throughout Florida first, and then nationally even.
Growing up in Miami, Miami Subs was such a staple for me. It was Burger King, McDonald's, and then Miami Subs. And I didn't realize how unique the menu was, because in addition to selling subs, like the name implies, they would also sell gyros.
Gyros. Say it right.
Gyros, gyros. Okay. As a kid, this was my first and only exposure to gyros for a long time. But it never seemed odd that a fast food place would sell it. Now, knowing that Gus Boulis, the founder, was Greek, it's obvious that he was adding some of his Greek touch to the restaurant menu.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I don't think you're alone in that. Like, in a lot of other major cities that have Greek communities, you'll find a lot of diners owned by Greek immigrants that will serve Greek dishes alongside traditional American food. So you'll find souvlaki and meatloaf. But in Miami, there really isn't a big Greek population, so I'd bet for a lot of people, this is the first time that they were exposed to gyros was at Miami Subs, like you were.
Looking for something different? Come to Miami Subs. With everything from gyros to super burgers, we've got something for every individual taste.
That was an old commercial for Miami Subs. Aside from its eclectic menu, its purple neon logo captured the Miami vibe.
So that's one of the reasons it becomes really popular, because it's known as a healthy subway. So it has fat and a few Greek options.
They also had the best curly fries. Maybe not the healthiest option.
Oh, but they were delicious. The whole place felt very South Florida too, right? They really leaned into the tropical vibe. Their color palette was pink and teal. There was palm trees as part of their logo, and their cups and packagings had tropical fish on it. It was this whole Miami stereotype vibe they had going on, and people really loved it.
Miami Subs would eventually expand to have 150 franchise locations in 16 states, along with Puerto Rico, Peru, the Dominican Republic, and Ecuador. The success of Miami Subs made Boulis a multimillionaire, but his next venture would be even bigger. In 1994, Boulis launched another business, Sun Cruise Casinos. Now, just to take a step back here, at this point, there's very little gambling allowed in Florida. There's horse racing and bingo at some of the Native American reservations, but no slots, no table games.
Now, if you take a boat and just go 5 miles off the coast into international waters, the gambling restrictions no longer apply. Take a cruise that leaves out of Port of Miami or Fort Lauderdale, and the casino will remain off until the ship enters international waters. But cruises go somewhere. The concept of Sun Cruise and some of the other companies was essentially a cruise to nowhere.
A large yacht with a casino will head out to international waters and fire up the casinos. Everyone has a few hours of fun and gambling, then it comes back to the same exact spot it left.
Now, there were other operators at the time. Companies like Discovery and Sea Escape were really well known in South Florida. But Sun Cruise quickly became one of the most popular ones.
From away to win, everybody knows it's the Sun Cruise Casino.
Sail free on the all-new Sun Cruise 12. Now bigger and smoother, with more ways to win than ever before.
So Belize is probably best known for Sun Cruise, which was the idea of these floating casinos, these cruises to nowhere. Because at the time, gambling is illegal in Miami. So he comes in and he says, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go 5 miles out to international water in these big ships. Have gambling, we'll have drinking, we'll have partying, all of this. And it's completely legal because it's in international waters. But at this point, the only places you could really gamble in the area were Native American reservations. The Hard Rock wasn't there yet.
Bulis launched the first Sun Cruise boat from Key Largo. It was a huge success.
Now, remember, he's also still running Miami Subs, and it's very successful, but he decides to sell.
A lot of people believe that the reason that he sold off Miami Subs was because he was very much very busy running Sun Cruise and all in on that. So, '98, he sells Miami Subs to Nathan's Hot Dogs for about $4.2 million.
The Sun Cruise fleet expands from one boat to 11, making it the largest casino ship business in Florida, according to the LA Times. They started running operations from ports all along the Florida coast: Key Largo, Port Canaveral, Daytona Beach, Fort Myers, Tampa, and Hollywood.
They're advertising heavily and becoming increasingly popular and increasingly profitable.
Our slots are the loosest in the state, with 98.8% payback machines. You won't find slots this loose anyplace else.
According to the Washington Post, Sun Cruise is making as much as $30 million a year.
Bulis gets pretty rich from this, although he's already rich from his other enterprises. This generates this fresh fortune, but also a lot of unwanted attention from the government.
According to the Washington Post, Florida officials were not a fan of Bulis or Sun Cruise. The port cities where the ships docked also weren't a fan. There were reports of drunk gamblers urinating on people's lawns. Government officials thought he was flouting the law with his floating casinos.
But to be clear, running a casino in international waters is not illegal.
For a period of time, they actually did an undercover investigation on the ship. And they were trying to see if they started gambling, 3 miles out to sea instead of 5 miles out to sea. But then it turned out that they had to scrap that investigation because they said those allegations are unfounded, etc.
Even though their investigation didn't reveal any wrongdoing with how they ran the casino, it didn't stop the government from trying to shut Bulis down. Eventually, they find an obscure maritime law called the Jones Act. This would allow the government to force Bulis to sell off his entire casino empire. Gus Bulis was born in the fishing village of Kavala in Macedonia in northern Greece.
It's this tiny, tiny fishing village. His dad is a fisherman, and every day he wants to meet him at the docks. He's very excited. But when he's about 16, his brother dies in an electrocution accident, and after that, he wants to leave. So he starts taking night classes, and then he eventually gets on a boat at Halifax, Canada.
It's 1968. Bulis is now living in Toronto and gets a job washing dishes at Mr. Submarine, later called Mr. Sub, a sandwich shop.
Within 6 months, he's known as being a very hard worker. So he has this very, seemingly endless drive. He works really hard, and he tells the couple who's running the restaurant, he basically says, this is how you can franchise the restaurant. This is what you can do. So they actually end up giving him a share of the restaurant and give him that restaurant that he was originally working dishes to manage. So it actually turns into a fairly successful chain.
About 3 years after moving to Canada, he meets his future wife, Frances. She's also from the same Greek town he's from.
That same day, he actually gets detained for being, quote-unquote, an illegal immigrant because he didn't have his papers. So then they actually end up getting married within a week because she did have her papers.
They would ultimately have 4 kids together, but the marriage didn't last and Frances moves back to Greece where she raises their 4 children. Boulos continued to help develop Mr. Sub into a chain of over 200 stores. He ends up selling the shares he has in Mr. Sub, which make him a millionaire. In 1980, he uses this money to move to Key West, where he'll go on to launch Miami Subs and Sun Cruise. Now separated from his wife, Frances, Gus and his girlfriend, Margaret, who helped him start Miami Subs, end up having 2 children, boys Alexander and Aristotle. Now, during Gus Boulos' rise to success and fortune, he was very much beloved in the Greek community in South Florida, and seen as the American dream, a rags-to-riches success story.
Boulos was a very nuanced figure, I would say. There was a lot to him. He's a very celebrated figure in a lot of ways because he was a very hard worker. He started from nothing, this tiny little fishing village. His family didn't have a lot of resources, and then he built up this huge empire. He was also very charismatic, and he was very involved in the local Orthodox Greek community. Very involved in the local Orthodox Greek church as well, and he was known as very generous. He always gave large donations to charity, especially local children's charities and to the church. And a lot of times he would bring people from his community onto his ship and he would have like free drinks and free gambling and everything. So a lot of people in his community liked him.
Father Michael Kamaritis said Boulos possessed what the Greeks call eleniko demonio, the ability to go anywhere in any condition and become a success. A restaurant owner in Key Largo said, quote, his capacity to create wealth the Greeks saw as a superhuman quality, end quote. And a local Greek community leader said, quote, he was known as the guy who would bail the community out, end quote.
But Boulos was a complicated figure. According to the Sun Sentinel, he left a slew of broken business deals. He also had anger issues, leading to restraining orders filed by both of his ex-partners.
On the other hand, he was known to have a big temper. He had a very big personality, and he was sued by a number of business partners who accused him of cheating them throughout the years. Both the people that he was, both the woman who he was in long-term relationships with, both his ex-wife and Margaret, who he never ended up marrying, but they were in a long domestic partnership. So Frances ends up taken out a restraining order against him in 97. And that same year, Margaret Ryan also takes out a restraining order against him. And she accuses him of calling her all the time and threatening to kill her, and also accuses him of violating the restraining order multiple times.
So Sun Cruise Casino is riding high, making as much as $30 million a year. But it's got the ire of the government, especially in Hollywood, Florida. This business drew opposition from various Florida government officials.
So residents of these areas are complaining, and the local sheriff is also complaining. And in 99, what they do is the federal authorities basically file a complaint against Boulos, and they cite this very obscure law called the Jones Act of 1920. And this basically says that fleets, they need to be owned by American citizens. And while Boulos did become an American citizen in 97, the complaint basically said that he had purchased most of his ships before then, and he'd actually tried to pass them off. They'd purchased under Ren's name, his girlfriend at the time, and the mother of his 2 sons.
The Jones Act, officially called the Merchant Marine Act of 1920, does stipulate that merchant fleets must be owned by U.S. citizens. Now, this can be traced back all the way to World War I when foreign countries withdrew their fleets for the war effort, leaving the United States in a shortage of vessels to conduct trade. Obviously, the Sun Cruise ships are not transporting goods, just drunk gamblers on trips to nowhere. But the law was enough to force Boulos to have to sell his boats or face the government seizing them. Boulos also admitted that they did try to hide ownership of six of the ships, since Boulos was not a U.S. citizen at the time.
So he did admit that they were trying to hide the ownership, and by around February 2000, he agrees to pay about $1 million in fines and sell Sun Cruise off.
They settle on February 10th, 2000, and Boulos agrees to divest himself of Sun Cruise within 36 months and to stay out of the floating casino business.
So Boulos needs to find a buyer, and fast. He gets connected with DC lobbyist Jack Abramoff, who then connects him with Adam Kadan.
So basically, near the tail end of 2000, September 2000, he sells Sun Cruise to pretty well-known political figures and businessmen. DC businessman Adam Kadan, who founded Dial Mattress, and also Jack Abramoff, who's this very influential lobbyist in DC at the time.
So Kadan didn't create all of Dial Mattress. He was the local franchisee owner of a Dial Mattress in Washington, D.C.
That's one of his local TV ads.
Kadan and Abramoff have big plans to expand the floating casino business. In an interview with Kadan in the documentary Casino Jack, he describes their plans to expand the business domestically and internationally.
Abramoff and Kadan create a 50-50 deal to buy Sun Cruise for about $150 million. Under the terms of the deal, they'd pay Boulos $23 million in cash, get a loan for $60 million, and they'd owe Boulos the final $67.5 million in IOUs.
They actually paid him a down payment for $20 million. And basically, once they showed him the wire transfer papers, they said, here, the wire transfer went through, and he said, okay, here's the company, it's signed over.
Kadan and Abramoff wired the initial $23 million to Boulos. Boulos then signs over Sun Cruise. Almost immediately after taking over, Abramoff and Kadan begin to use Sun Cruise as their own piggy bank.
They start paying themselves $500,000 a year salaries. They pay over $300,000 for skyboxes at sports arenas. Now, this all fits in with Abramoff's role as a lobbyist, wining and dining congressmen and senators to take favorable actions for his clients. In a 60 Minutes interview, Abramoff said he'd spend over $1 million a year on tickets to various sporting events and concerts, and then offer them up to congressmen and senators to wine and dine people from their district.
Abramoff was using the funds from Sun Cruise to fund his D.C. lobbying activities, and they start firing Sun Cruise employees, including several of Boulos' friends and relatives. Within a few months of the deal, Boulos realizes something is wrong when he never receives the money that was supposed to be wired to him.
But basically, within a couple of months, by December, the deal turns sour. And Boulos basically, he accuses Kadan of faking the wire transfer. And this is something that they deny, they fight over. And he hands it to him, what are you trying to do? You're trying to cheat me. And in fact, actually, they get into this physical altercation, Boulos and Kadan. And Kadan says that Boulos stabbed him with a pen and then he threatened to kill him.
According to the LA Times, Kadan called Boulos an animal after this altercation and thought he was trying to have him killed. On January 19th, 2001, Boulos went to court, seeking an injunction to prevent Kadan from operating the boats and to force them to pay him the money he was owed.
And Boulos basically says, listen, I want my stuff back. So he starts trying to get legally his business back so he can sell it to somebody else.
Less than a month later, on February 6th, Boulos was leaving his office in his BMW. A car in front of him slowed to a stop, forcing Boulos to also stop. A second car pulls up behind him, boxing him in. Then a dark Mustang rolls up in the opposite direction. The driver rolls down the window and fires 5 to 6 hollow point bullets.
Boulos saw the gun because forensics would later show residue on his hand from Boulos trying to defend himself. Three of the bullets hit Boulos in the chest. The three cars sped off. Despite being shot 3 times, Boulos is still fighting for his life. He manages to drive for a mile before he crashes into a tree. He was taken to Broward General Medical Center, where he later died from his wounds. Who killed Gus Boulos and why? It's an answer that would take 4 years to get and lead all the way back to the Gambino crime family in New York. Gus Boulos, self-made millionaire and founder of Sun Cruise and Miami Subs, has been murdered, gangland style, while driving home in 2001. The investigation would end up taking 4 years before any arrests were made, so we're going to jump ahead to 2005 and then fill in the gaps with what happened and why Boulos was killed.
If you fast forward to 2005, that's when three notable figures in New York City's organized crime world are actually arrested in connection with Boulos' death. And you can't really make these names up. It's Anthony Little Tony Ferrari, James Pudgy Furillo, and Anthony Big Tony Moscatello.
Back in late 2000, when Boulos was fighting with Kadan trying to get his money, Kadan hired Moscatello, whom he described as a business mentor, according to the Washington Post. Moscatello was also a known associate and unofficial bookkeeper for the Gambino crime family, having shown up on wiretaps with John Gotti in the 1980s.
The Gambino crime family was one of the five families that dominated organized crime in New York City. In the 1980s, John Gotti was head of the Gambino Mafia and was considered one of the most powerful and dangerous crime bosses in the U.S. According to the New York Times, under Gotti's rule, the Gambino family was bringing in over $500 million a year.
Kadan made Moscatello a food and beverage consultant to Sun Cruise, paying him and his daughter, Jennifer, $145,000. Kadan also had Sun Cruise pay $95,000 for surveillance services to a mysterious company called Moon Over Miami Beach. This company was incorporated by Anthony Little Tony Ferrari, who, according to the Weekly Standard, was known for bragging that he was John Gotti's cousin.
Kadan said he hired Ferrari to protect the ships out of fear Boulos might try to vandalize them. Boulos did know about these payments and was against them. However, with Boulos fighting to get control of his company back and kicking Kadan out, prosecution would argue Ferrari and Moscatello stood to lose a lot of money.
So what the prosecution argued is that after Boulos threatened to take his company back, both Kadan, Abramoff, and also Moscatello stood to lose a lot of money. So the prosecution argued that Moscatello goes ahead and hires a hitman with the help of these two other men, one of whom, you know, calls to alert them when Boulos is leaving his office, the other one which helps cut him off. So prosecution alleges that all three of these men are involved in this murder.
So in 2005, Moscatello, Ferrari, and Fiorillo are arrested. Moscatello is accused of orchestrating the murder and Ferrari of helping carry it out. They were both charged with first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and solicitation to commit murder.
James Pudgy Furillo was 28 at the time, with no known criminal record, and was a protege of Ferrari. He was charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. Furillo's role was to get rid of the Black Ford Mustang and gun. In his later testimony, he said he tossed the gun into a river. But now, what about the actual shooter? Who pulled the trigger that killed Boulos?
This involves a turn of events that could only happen in South Florida. The actual hitman was John J.J. Guarino. In 2003, in a totally unrelated incident, Guarino was trying to shake down Ralph Liotta, the owner of Corner Deli in Boca Raton. They get into a scuffle. Liotta shot and killed Guarino in what he described as self-defense, but he did end up going to prison for the shooting. He even later wrote a book about it called, wait for it, Bread and Bullets. Only later did investigators piece together that Guarino was a well-known mafia hitman and was the shooter in Boulos' murder.
In 2005, Abramoff and Kadan were also indicted, but not for murder. A federal grand jury indicted them on five counts of wire fraud and one count of conspiracy relating to the $148 million Sun Cruise purchase. In unrelated cases, Abramoff was also charged with mail fraud, tax evasion, and conspiracy to bribe public officials. For the fraud, Kadan revealed what they did in the documentary Casino Jack. They went to Kinko's, scanned a real wire transfer, then doctored it up to look like they sent Boulos the $23 million. Turns out, Bullis was right all along. They never sent him the money. It was all a scam.
Kidan and Abramoff pled guilty pretty quickly. Kidan told investigators what he knew about Bullis's murder.
Kidan says, "I had no idea who Oscutello was, even though they were friends. Kidan's originally from Brooklyn, so they were friends for a while. He says, I had no idea that he was connected to the mob, but he actually told me that he hired this guy to murder him. So they used that testimony in the trials against these three men."
Kidan said he didn't know anything about the murder ahead of time. After Bullis was killed, Ferrari came to his house and said, quote, "This happened. We have no choice. It happened, and now you're involved in it. If it ever comes down to it, I'm going to say you paid us. Don't screw with me or I'll kill you. I'll kill you, I'll kill your family." End quote. Fiorillo, the guy that got rid of the car and gun, also took a plea deal in exchange for testifying against Mafiatello and Ferrari.
Ferrari had a different version of what happened. According to him, Kidan was the mastermind behind the murder. But evidence and witness testimonies, especially from Fiorillo, backed up Kidan's version of events and that he wasn't involved in the murder. According to Fiorillo, when he was watching the newscast of Bullis' murder, he says that Ferrari called him up and said, quote, "It looks like our boy Bullis had an accident," end quote.
Fiorillo served 6.5 years and was released from prison in 2015. Mafiatello and Ferrari got sentenced to life in prison. Kidan and Abramoff were never charged in connection with Bullis' murder. They both were sentenced to about 6 years for Sun Cruise and other wire fraud schemes.
Things didn't look too bright for Sun Cruise after Bullis was murdered. In June 2001, Kidan placed Sun Cruise in bankruptcy. The Bullis estate ends up buying out Kidan for $200,000 and takes control of the company. Despite regaining control, they're not able to literally and metaphorically right the ship.
It goes out of business pretty soon after, and in part because gambling gets legalized in Florida. So after that, you know, you got the Hard Rock Cafe. So the fleet just, it gets smaller and smaller. They shut it down one by one, and then it just disappears by early 2000s.
Now, this isn't the end of Mafiatello and Ferrari.
The Florida Appeals Court has reversed the murder conviction of Anthony Big Tony Mafiatello in the allegedly mob-connected slaying in 2001 of businessman Gus Bullis. Judges ruled that a statement admitted in Mafiatello's trial linking him to the alleged hitman was improper.
Because the gunman, Guarino, was killed in the Boca Deli shakedown, it was ruled that witnesses saying he told them he was the Sun Cruise gunman would be considered hearsay and couldn't be used in the trial that convicted them.
They end up appealing that conviction just a few years later because the man who said that Mafiatello hired this gunman, he is dead at this point. So they can't cross-examine him. So they say, all right, we got to do this again, because at this point, that's hearsay.
That trial was supposed to take place in March 2020, but was delayed due to the pandemic. It's now supposed to happen this year in 2022.
There's an epilogue to this story. Bullis had two sons with Margaret, Alexander and Aristotle. There is a trust and life insurance policy set up for each of them. Until they came of age, the trust was controlled by their father's nephew, Spiro Naus. As the boys grew up, Naus helped fill the void from their father's murder.
The sons, Alex and Aristotle, Alexander and Aristotle, Alex and Ari, as they're known, they're 5 and 7 at the time of Bullis' death. They don't really... I spoke to both of them, and during this time, it was... You know, it was very kind of chaotic and traumatic for them. They don't really remember much, but they remember that Naus was basically like a father figure to him, to them. They, and a good friend to Ren, to Margaret and their mom. He basically lived next door to them. He saw them almost every, he sort of took, filled the spot that was left behind when Gus Bullis was murdered.
With Bullis's death, Naus was left in control of the trust, in addition to some money he received directly from Bullis' will, according to Ali's reporting.
He's left actually a decent amount of money, several million, by Bullis. but he's also named settler of the trustee that Bula set up for two of his sons. So basically, Nellis is named the settler of two separate trusts that now sets up for his sons, comes the rent. And the trusts each have this life insurance policy of $1 million in the case of Bula's death. So he dies and Nellis has control of the trust. They trusted him very much, but unfortunately, this would only make his eventual betrayal all the more painful, because as early as 2005, these pretty much undisputed mortgage and bank statements presented in court, they show that now started taking money from their accounts. And he did so in secrecy, and he lied about it. I actually spoke to Nellis and I asked him about that, and Nellis said I wasn't taking money, I was just borrowing it. But he never notified the sons.
Nellis ended up taking about $300,000. He did pay the money back, but it wasn't until after he was caught, over 15 years later. If that money had been sitting in the trust where it belonged, it would have been earning a lot of interest, well more than the original $300,000.
So it would have been worth a lot more than the money he eventually returned. So now the brothers are in court and they're fighting to get treble damages, which is what they're entitled to, which is triple the amount of money he took, which is what it would be worth if he hadn't taken it out of the account. I mean, while the loss is pretty significant monetarily, the brothers were most upset about the betrayal.
Now, there is one final part of Bulis' legacy we haven't talked about. The thing that opened this episode, Miami Subs. Bulis sold the chain to Nathan's Hot Dog in 1998. The acquisition didn't work out, and Nathan sold it to a private equity group in 2007.
In 2012, a new investor took a significant equity stake in the chain.
One Armando Christian Perez, better known by his stage name, Pitbull.
He loved Miami Subs, and he actually started writing his music. And he said, one day I'm going to own Miami Subs, and it turned out to be true.
Thank you for listening to Paradise Lost, Crime in Miami, where each new episode will bring you a true crime story right from the South Florida headlines.
Paradise Lost, Crime in Miami is a production of Sonoro and Trojan Horse in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura Network. Hosted and produced by Kareem Tapsch, Joey Dowd, and Christian Hatar.
Edited by Angelina Mosher Salazar. Fact-checking by Evelyn Uribe and Sara Mota. Engineering by Mane Parra, Daniel Padilla, and Fernando Galaviz. Executive produced by Jasmine Romero and Joshua Weinstein for Sonoro. Kareem Tapsch and Alex Fumero for Trojan Horse. And Giselle Bansis and Conal Byrne for iHeart.
Listen to Paradise Lost, Crime in Miami on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.